Hello and welcome to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm sitting here in the map room of Hart House at the University of Toronto. My name is Carl Jahofsky. You're listening to Animal Voices. And on today's program, we are going to be speaking with Justine Pimlott. She is the director of a film that premiered last week in Toronto at the Royal Cinema called Cat City. I believe it was a one-time only showing, but it is showing again this Friday at 8 p.m. on Global TV. And she's going to be talking with us about the film. Cat City is a film that talks about the plight of urban animals, specifically cats, lost cats, abandoned cats, and feral cats all over town. And she's worked for a long time on this film, and I'm looking forward to speaking with her very much. But before we do that, I'm going to get to a little bit of news. In the news this week, coming from the Associated Press, this one was a strange one, and when I ran across it, I knew I had to share it. The headline is, Kentucky loses world championship of coon hunting. Kentucky is no longer top dog when it comes to coon hunting. Illinois has landed the Professional Kennel Club's World Coon Hound Championships, a 10-day event that had been held in Kentucky for nearly two decades. While residents of Salem, Illinois prepare for the arrival of nearly 2,000 of the nation's best hounds later this month, business owners in Kentucky still are chafing at that they lost an event with an economic impact of up to $3.5 million. Quote, it's going to be a terrible blow to this area, said Randy Mabry, owner of Willow Pond Southern Catfish Restaurant in the western Kentucky community of Hardin. When those guys are here, they spend a lot of money. Kentucky officials were caught off guard by the Professional Kennel Club's decision to move the event to Illinois, said Gil Lawson, spokesman for the Kentucky Tourism, Arts, and Heritage Cabinet. Quote, we did not know about this until after the decision had been made, Lawson said. Although the organization had been considering a move, President Roger Carnegie said a devastating ice storm that hit Kentucky last winter cemented the decision. That storm downed trees across the state, making it difficult for hunters to walk through forested areas. Nearly $200,000 in cash prizes are awarded to dog owners during the World Championships, but the big winners have already been the local businesses, said Dave Tarnowski, owner of Ken Oak Resort Early American Motel in Aurora, a tiny tourist community on the banks of Kentucky Lake. Illinois officials, aware of the economic benefits, went courting when they learned that the Professional Kennel Club was looking for a new host site, said Tracy McDonald, Director of Economic Development in Salem. McDonald expects the event to draw about 7,000 visitors to Salem, population 8,000, beginning October 22nd. Those visitors, she said, will be greeted by huge welcome banners, the first one beside the exit ramp off Interstate 57. Others will be strung from light poles high above the main thoroughfare. Welcome posters have been distributed to every store in town. In the event, raccoons aren't shot, firearms aren't even allowed. The winner is the dog that can find and chase the wily little raccoons up the trees fastest. Joe Kathman, president of the Tourism Bureau of Southwestern Illinois, said her organization estimated the economic impact of hosting the World Championship and related events at between $3 million and $3.5 million. This is a big deal for the little town of Salem, Kathman said. And the next piece of news coming to us today from Buzz Up, the headline is, Massachusetts company fattens up monkeys for science. Animal rights activists are crying foul about Charles River's laboratory's efforts to fatten up and then sell obese monkeys for research. Quote, it is horrible that these monkeys are induced with diseases that will make them suffer a terrible death, said Justin Goodman, a research supervisor at the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals Laboratory Investigations Department. But Wilmington-based Charles River's lab said, with the nation crippled by an obesity epidemic, its monkey business is increasingly necessary. In 30 out of the 50 states, at least 25% of the population is obese, health experts say. As obesity and its associated complications, such as heart disease and type 2 diabetes, wreak havoc on the nation's health, researchers are scrambling to create new ways to treat obesity-related medical conditions. And because primates are such close relatives to humans, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration requires that all new drugs be tested on primates before they are marketed to the public, Charles River Lab spokeswoman Amy Chian Caruso said. Charles River Lab's plans to sell its fattened-up monkeys to pharmaceutical companies, academic research centers, and biotechnology firms that will examine, quote, the metabolic changes associated with the onset and development of diabetes and other obesity-related diseases, the company has said. To prepare the monkeys, Charles River Labs fed them a high-fat diet for 18 months. In that time period, many of the monkeys developed glucose intolerance and a foundation for what scientists say will become type 2 or adult-onset diabetes. Last week, Charles River Labs began marketing the fattened-up monkeys for the first time. Chan Caruso said, "It's still too early to tell what the response from potential customers will be." But PETA's Goodman, for one, is dismayed. Quote, "Obesity is a preventable disease. It can be prevented by changes in lifestyle," he said. "We encourage people to use a vegetarian diet." That is the news for today. Once again, my name is Carl Lejachowski, and you are listening to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. Today on Animal Voices, we'll be speaking with Justine Pimlott. She is the director of the upcoming film Cat City, which is premiering this Friday at 8 p.m. on Global Television. There was an airing last week at the Royal Cinema, and this is a film that looks at lost, abandoned, and feral cats in the Toronto area, and I'm very, very pleased to have Justine on the program today. Thank you so much for being on the show, Justine.
Thank you so much for having me.
I wanted to start by maybe just asking you if you could tell us a bit about your background making films.
Yeah, I'm a documentary filmmaker, so I wanted to be clear, this is a documentary, and I've been making documentary films for, 20 years, and I received my training at the National Film Board of Canada, and I had the privilege of working on numerous documentaries with some of our foremost Canadian documentary filmmakers, and I make documentaries about social issues.
And what is Red Queen Productions?
Red Queen Productions is the production company that belongs to myself and my producing partner, Maya Gallis, and that's our umbrella production company that produces all of our work.
So you've done films on all sorts of subjects before. What got you interested in the subject of cats in the city?
Yeah, I sort of frame it like it's about the cat overpopulation crisis, and you know, which takes us into the whole issue of feral, abandoned, and stray cats. Yeah, it's interesting. The story literally came to my doorstep. We live on a very cat-friendly street, and some cats who no longer had homes decided they wanted to live with us. And unfortunately, we didn't have room for them. And so it took us into this, it took me, rather, into finding homes for them. And, you know, from time to time, you know, a stray or even sometimes it would look like a semi-feral cat would show up. So when I needed to find homes for these cats, it took me into this whole world of rescue groups and rescue organizations like Toronto Cat Rescue. And it was through my contact with them that I became familiar with even the existence of cat rescue groups, and from there I just, you know, I love animals, and I was very compelled by the way in which these people showed up. They took the cats, they fostered them, and then eventually they found homes for them, and I was just extremely impressed and with their dedication, and these are, you know, good Samaritans. These are people who are not paid to do this. These are people who volunteer thousands of hours of volunteer hours to do this. So it took me into this whole area. And then, you know, through my research, I realized that we have a pretty serious cat overpopulation crisis in this country. Same thing in the United States, in North America, and in a lot of countries. So I was curious to find out, well, what's the situation here in Canada? Mm-hmm. And so my research began from there.
And the numbers are really staggering. For anyone who doesn't know what the numbers are, maybe you could tell us a bit about some of the statistics that you talk about in the film, and maybe how you arrived at those.
Sure. Well, I mean, the statistics, it's a very hard, you know, that's why I use the word estimate. And the reason I do that is because I want to be very clear that it's very hard to have an absolute number when it comes to stray, abandoned, and feral cats, just by the nature of the way that cats are very stealthy, they hide. So this number is given by rescue organizations and different activists themselves. And so, you know, the way I describe it is that in the city of Toronto, it's estimated that, you know, nearly 100,000 lost, abandoned, and feral cats roam the city streets. And, you know, that's an estimate based on the Greater Toronto Area population. Mm. It's based on the number of colonies that are out there in the city that rescue organizations and individuals are familiar with. But like I said, it's very hard to track. You know, the feral cat populations in the colonies change, you know, just through, you know, what are the survival rates and just through new cats coming in and then other cats disappearing. So it's very hard to track, but, you know, that estimate has come from the people who are out there on the front lines doing the work.
And obviously cat overpopulation has been a problem for many years. Did you get the sense making the film that this is something that's getting worse, or is it something that's sort of stable and that was, I guess what I mean is, besides your personal experience, did you feel like something became apparent through the making of the film that it made sense to make this film now as opposed to, you know?
I think for me, the thing that was the most staggering discovery, you know, as an ordinary citizen who, you know, is interested in citizenship and interested in social issues, is I was surprised at actually, in the film I talk about, you know, what is also going on in our traditional municipal animal control shelters. And, you know, in the animal welfare movement, we talk about a kill versus no-kill shelter. And in a no-kill shelter, ultimately there's really no such thing as a no-kill shelter in the sense that even in a shelter where there's a no-kill philosophy, animals sometimes have to be euthanized mm-hmm. because of out of compassionate reasons, like they're sick or injured and they can't recover. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, what I discovered in the process of researching my film is the staggering number of healthy, adoptable animals that are euthanized in our shelters simply because they're making room for the next wave of lost, abandoned, and feral cats coming through. And I was absolutely shocked by that.
Maybe on the subject of definitions, and you're talking about kill versus no kill, maybe you could define for our listeners what is a feral cat.
Sure.
I'm sure people can probably differentiate between lost and abandoned, that sort of
sure.
makes sense, but for
yeah.
people who don't know, what is a feral cat, and what's a feral cat colony?
Well, okay, yeah, absolutely. So when I talk about the film and the situation, you know, we're talking about lost, abandoned, and feral cats. Essentially, feral cats are the offspring of cats who become lost or who are abandoned. The cats who are lost or abandoned aren't spayed or neutered, and so they become pregnant and they give birth to offspring. These cats who were once domesticated are now trying to adapt, and they're living out on the streets. And if they survive and they reproduce, they give birth to kittens. And after a period of 8 weeks, if those kittens don't have any human contact, they don't become socialized. So essentially, they become feral, and they're not socialized, so they're not domestic. So basically, so the cats who are lost or abandoned, they'll form a colony. They'll create a colony, and then, you know, they give birth to kittens that become feral, and then they reproduce, and it continues. And so a colony is the home environment where a colony of, you know, a colony by definition can be 5 to 50 cats, you know, or more. So so these colonies, they get established, and they're basically the home of these cats where they've created a territory and where they've been able to find a food source, a water source, source of shelter, and then that's where the cats live in this colony. And feral cats are very hard to socialize, as I mentioned. So what rescue groups, individuals and organizations do is they do something called trap, neuter, return. And they feel that that's the humane way to treat a cat colony like this. In our traditional animal control shelters, if a feral cat arrives at one of these shelters, they're euthanized right away because they're not seen as adoptable. But what rescue organizations and groups do is they systematically trap each cat. They take the cat to a vet to be spayed or neutered, and then they have it, you know, inoculated and checked for disease and so on, and they have it inoculated for rabies and so on, and then they return the cat to its colony, to essentially its home, and then they provide feeders for the colony for the rest of that colony's life. and they feel that this is the humane approach to dealing with the feral cat population that's out in our cities. And then through attrition, eventually the colony, it will stop reproducing, and eventually the colony will disappear.
I had the privilege of doing some work with feral cats and helping some organizations do trap, neuter, and release type of thing. And
I just want to clarify now that they call it trap, neuter, return.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
trap,
because,
neuter, return.
Yeah, because they don't want to just release it anywhere. They
right,
do want
right.
to make sure it returns to its own colony.
Right, my mistake. And one of the things that struck me right away was that these were much smaller organizations than the typical sort of animal organizations that we think of, sort of like the OSPCA or the Humane Society. Is there a reason why they're generally smaller organizations, or at least from my experience, that's what I saw? Is that something you found as well?
I did find that they're small. I mean, I think Toronto Cat Rescue is one of the larger ones, and they
okay.
have their annual fundraisers and so on. You know, they're a charitable organization, and just... For example, on the Facebook group of Toronto Cat Rescue, they have 2,000 members, you know. But then out there, there's a lot of just ordinary individuals who come upon a colony, and they start to take care of it. And they actually use their own money, their own resources, their own volunteer hours to take care of it. And there's an enormous amount of people out there like that are doing that work. And is there a particular reason why? I think that they're just people who come upon a situation and they want to do something about it, and they do something about it. They're very proactive and they're doing something about it. They're compelled by their, you know, civic duty and conscience. You know, but is there an overall reason why? I don't really have an answer to that. I think that, you know, what we need to see happen is we need to have larger organizations like the Toronto Humane Society and the SPCA get involved in some kind of a pilot project in the city of Toronto, you know, provide resources to help these individuals that are out there day in and day out, and to give them the support that they need to be able to really, really make an impact on this crisis. Just for example, you know, this is a recent thing that's happened in the city of London. You know, they have a pilot project where the city of London has become involved with the rescue organizations and individuals, and they've created a pilot project where they're helping to provide shelter and helping to provide the resources to trap, neuter, return, you know, the feral cats that are in the city of London. We should be doing the same thing here, and we're not doing the same thing here.
Maybe you could tell us a little bit about Robert Bridges. This is someone who's featured in the film, and he's an individual who takes care of who was taking care of a feral cat colony.
He still is.
He still is.
Yeah, he's out at Scarborough Bluff area, and he takes care of a colony of 27 cats out there. And he's exactly one of the people that I've just described. He was down there, and he came upon the cats, and he saw them, and he felt that he could do something about it. You know, this is a man who's not being paid to do this. You know, he's paying for cat food out of his own pocket. He has the support of, you know, some financial support from another citizen who feels that this is an important issue. This is an example where, I mean, when you see the cats out there, you know, and when you see the cats in the film in Cat City, you know, what you're going to see is that, you know, Rob's colony isn't your typical colony of feral cats that you expect to see. You know, you do see these kind of colonies in the film, you know, the more beaten up and cats who really look like they've really suffered. You know, Rob's cats, there's a kind of majesty about them, and you know, they're well cared for, as are the other cats. But the thing about Rob's cats are there's a kind of they look, you know, from looking at them like they could be somebody's pet. But they're feral, and they've adapted to living where they live. And Rob has a, you know, a kind of unique and profound relationship with them. You know, and you'll see you know, through watching Cat City, you'll get to see the kind of interactions that he has, and just the majesty of these animals out there. And and I hope that I'm able to allow people to never, when they're walking down the street, if they see a cat, they'll never look at a cat the same way after watching Cat City, you know, in the sense that they'll feel that they've been educated around this issue, and they'll feel compelled to do something about it.
Justine, we need to take a short break to do a station ID and a quick ad. And when we come back, I'd like to maybe talk about some of the issues between smaller organizations, larger organizations, the, of course, very sticky subject of euthanasia. And I'd like to actually talk a little bit about the nuts and bolts about how you actually made the film. I know feral cats can be very secretive and very very difficult to pin down, but you've, even just from the preview, you've obviously got some amazing footage, and you've been able to make a film that's got a good message, but also visually has a lot of impact. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that, if that would be okay with you.
Absolutely.
Great. So we're going to have a quick station ID and an ad, and we'll be back with Justin Pimlott on Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5 FM. Welcome back to Animal Voices on CIUT 89.5 FM. My name is Carl Ozhahovsky, and today we are speaking with Justine Pimlott. She is the director of Cat City, which is a documentary looking at the subject of cat overpopulation in Toronto. Justine, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
I wanted to talk a little bit about, there was obviously a lot of controversy this past summer with the Toronto Humane Society and the OSPCA, and I'm definitely not interested in getting into the sort of nuts and bolts of that controversy, but one of the things that did come up in that sort of battle, which is still ongoing, is the subject of euthanasia and kill versus no-kill shelters. I certainly had debates with friends of mine and people who I was close with when I did participate in the trap, neuter, and return program about what is humane and what is the most humane thing to do. You know, you were mentioning before the break, visually, a lot of feral cat colonies can look very beat up, and like there's an incredible amount of suffering there, despite the fact that, you know, you can sterilize a population and keep it in check, and that is certainly a humane way of dealing with things. It doesn't necessarily provide these animals with the sort of comforts or even basic necessities that they might need for life. And so I'm wondering if is this a topic that you bridge, and if so, I'm wondering how you managed to deal with such an incredibly difficult topic, and if not, I'm wondering why not.
Right. Well, there's two parts to your question. You know, first of all, the groups, the rescue groups and individuals in my film in Cat City absolutely do provide the essential needs for these cats. They provide food, they provide water on a daily basis.
Okay.
They provide shelter from the harsh weather. These cats are monitored, they're well taken care of. I think when you come upon a new colony, obviously you're going to see cats that are in distress. They have a very harsh life. Their life expectancy is very short compared to a cat that's sitting in someone's house next to a fireplace on the, you know, on their pillow. Cats living in a home can live up to 20 years. You know, feral cats, you know, it's anywhere from 2 to 5 years, sometimes less. But they're, you know, as I said, they are being provided with the basic necessities. They receive, you know, veterinary care, and in the wintertime, they are provided with shelter, you know, that are insulated and warm. So the rescue groups and individuals do the best that they can for the cats who are suffering. I think basically when you provide a food source and when you provide shelter and when you spayed and neutered, territory issues and so on, and you know, issues around roaming and so on, and fighting and so on, become removed to a certain degree. So I think it is the humane approach, as opposed to rounding up all of these animals and euthanizing them. I think what the rescue groups and individuals are doing is the humane approach. You know, in terms of the lost, abandoned, and feral cats ending up in a traditional municipal animal control shelter. This is the other part of your question. Unfortunately, thousands upon thousands of healthy adoptable animals are euthanized, you know, simply to make space for the next round coming in. And it's a very, very touchy subject. It's very touchy. And Bill Bruce from Calgary Animal Services, who has become a leader in this country in terms of actually providing solutions to this problem, he says in the film, he says, those kind of decisions in traditional municipal animal control shelters are not made lightly. They're fraught with a lot of heartache. You know, these are sentient beings that are being euthanized. And I don't think that the people who have to do that job enjoy it. I think it must be one of the most difficult jobs to do in the world. And I think, though, that what has happened, unfortunately, is this solution, and Bill Bruce also said this, is it's not working any longer. It's no longer working, and we have to do something different. We have to bring a different approach to it. There's a sort of unanimous feeling in the rescue people that are doing this work that really, Bill Bruce says, you know, you can build a shelter as big as a skyscraper, and it'll be full just simply because of the way that cats, you know, reproduce.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, everybody's in agreement that the way to stop this is through spay-neuter. And, you know, if because you can spend day after day after day rescuing, but unless people spay-neuter their pets, unless there's, you know, low-cost, accessible spay-neuter clinics available in our cities, we're not doing anything. We're not being able to do really to do anything to help to stop the crisis.
So maybe then we could shift focus a little bit, because obviously the question of euthanasia is always a little bit of a red herring. If you're not willing to talk about the further production and reproduction of cats, whether it be through breeding or through lack of spay and neuter on the part of pet owners. And maybe you could tell us about Calgary's animal control plan.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what they do.
You know, I do address the issues of euthanasia in the film very much so. But as I said, I want to be really clear that it is very fraught, and it's very difficult for everybody involved to talk about it. And I, you know, really do try to bring a balanced perspective to talking about euthanasia, and I do believe I achieve that. But I do think it's important that the public realizes that this is a solution that's no longer working, and this is a solution that we've been using for so many years, and we can do something about it. So, yes, let's talk about solutions, absolutely, and I do in the film. I actually, Bill Bruce from Calgary, what they're doing is they have built a low-cost or free spay-neuter clinic for those people who are under a certain income level, and they are providing, you know, spay-neuter for thousands and thousands of mostly cats.
Which is, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I need to say that that is, it's so fantastic to hear that. And actually, just this week, I had friends of mine who happened upon a bunch of, I guess you could call them feral, a bunch of kittens who are living basically under their friend's porch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're trying to decide whether to take them to the Humane Society, where, I mean, you know, kittens are generally speaking fairly adoptable, and feral kittens are fairly socializable. But the other option, which is keeping some of the kittens and providing care for them themselves, is something that they're not sure if they can consider, because it's hundreds and hundreds of dollars to do spay and neuter and vaccinations.
And the costs vary. I mean, you know, Fern Sinkins, who's in Cat City, is the president of Toronto Cat Rescue, and she says in the film, you know, people call around and they get prices, you know, from $100 to, you know, $800 to spay-neuter, depending on where you call. And so, you know, Toronto Cat Rescue and different organizations here are trying to get the City of Toronto to have a low-cost, accessible spay-neuter clinic in the downtown area. You know, a group called Space Central has just, working with the Ontario SPCA, has just opened one recently in Newmarket. But that's not an accessible clinic for the City of Toronto. And I think that, you know, we have the resources here in terms of Toronto Animal Services being able to become involved in creating low-cost or free, in some cases, spay-neuter clinic downtown. We have the resources here to do that. And I think that Bill Bruce has thrown down the gauntlet and saying, you know, we're doing it. You know, and so it's time for other cities to step up to the plate and to take action and to show some leadership in this area.
What do you think has stopped us so far? What do you think is, if it is within our means as a city to do that, what do you think holds us back?
I think there's I think change for some people is difficult, and I think that it's like this model has worked, and it really takes someone who's a visionary and a leader to say, actually, you know what, this model is no longer working, and it's time that we do this. And you need someone who can take action, and Bill Bruce is obviously somebody that can do that, and you know, we need the same thing here. And we also need the rescue organizations and the Humane Society and Toronto Animal Service to all be able to work together to help to create this. And, you know, I think that the experts, you know, are the people that do this every day. that are out there dealing with the feral colonies and are out there dealing with the cat overpopulation crisis every day. Those are the experts. These are the people who know firsthand what's needed, and I think that, you know, all of the people in the city, you have to be able to sit in a room and, you know, as Bill Bruce says in Cat City, to come together in order to facilitate change. So that's the challenge. And he says that's the first step to becoming a humane community. Mm-hmm. And that's the challenge for us in the city of Toronto, is that the various organizations, the Toronto Humane Society, Toronto Animal Services, have to come together and have to you know, work together to be able to make this difference. It's absolutely necessary.
I want to shift focus a little bit, because often when we watch films, we don't necessarily think about what's happening on the other side of the camera. When I watched the preview for Cat City, I thought right away about how it was possible that you got some of your footage and what the process of making the film was like. You've obviously made lots of films before this one, so I guess maybe we could start by asking how making this film was different from making your other films.
Yeah, it absolutely was different because we're filming animals instead of people, right. And which I really enjoyed, I have to say. Mm-hmm. You know, we're so dependent on verbal communication as human beings. You know, mm-hmm. It's everything to us, right? And so really the challenge was, how do I get the cats POV in the film? Mm-hmm. You know, how do we, this is about them. You know, I'm going to have some interviews. I'm going to be, you know, talking to the people who rescue them. But where's their presence, you know, in the film? And their very nonverbal presence. And so, you know, it really was about making sure that we got down at the level of the cat, you know, in mm-hmm. terms of the camera, in terms of, like, what's their point of view. And also just giving them their moments. You know, the other challenge was, of course, cats are very shy and stealthy, they hide, and so, you know, there were obviously days where we would show up to do some filming and they wouldn't show up,
right?
You know, so, you know, we had to have a little bit more of a shooting ratio in terms of shooting days, you know, because of that, filming days because of that. We would show up to film at a colony, and if it was raining, well, they weren't going to go out, you know,
right.
We would. And then of course, we wanted to illustrate how trap, neuter, return works. And so, you know, we would get all set up with one of the rescue workers, and, you know, they'd have their traps set up and so on. And, you know, a cat would just sort of, like, rub up against the cage, you know, like, and they would know. They were pretty savvy, some of them, you know, like, I know what this is, you know, I'm not stupid. And they'd rub against it, and we'd think, oh, here they are, you know, and we'd wait for them to go in, and, of course, they'd leave. So sometimes it was quite hilarious, and there was just a lot of constantly asking myself and talking to my cinematographer, Harold Bachman, saying, you know, so what can we do here to really make sure that we have a sense of the cat, you know? Mm-hmm. And so many people have commented, you know, when we had the theatrical premiere last week at the Royal Cinema, many people commented on, you know, I really felt the cat's presence. I just felt like I got to know the cat. And this wasn't so much from mm-hmm. people endlessly talking about the cat, per se. It was just them speaking and then cutting to the cat, and them speaking, cutting to the cat. It was really just giving, introducing, you know, one of the feral cats, like Hemingway out at the boatyard colony. And then another moment with Hemingway interacting with one of the rescue workers. And then, you know, just seeing Hemingway later on. And so you really felt there was a through line with some of them, and a dramatic arc in terms of their stories as well.
Obviously, films are not cheap to make.
Right.
And on the production end of things, did you find that you had support? Was it difficult finding funding and that sort of thing to actually get the film produced?
It took a while. It took me 3 years altogether, and you know, which isn't too bad. I mean, because you hear about people, you know, 10 years, whatever, 5 years. Mm. You know, so 3 years isn't too bad, but that's long. You know, it is long. We were lucky in that we had a commissioning a broadcaster, Sir James Flynn at Global Television, who was really interested in the project and really understood it. And so she really championed the project. So we were lucky in that regard. But it still took some convincing to finally to get Global to come in. But we're really, really happy, you know, that they finally did, because, you know, this is going to be on primetime national television, mm-hmm. and, you know, without them coming on board, I wouldn't say that I would not have made the film. You know, I would have made the film, but it would have been a lot more difficult, there's no question, and I'm really pleased that, that they said yes and that they took the issue seriously enough to come on board.
So maybe tell us about when people can see the film.
Absolutely. Well, it is on Global Television this Friday, October 9th. It's at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. It's 8 o'clock Pacific Time and Central Time out on the prairies. It's going to be on at 7 o'clock. I'm not sure what the repeat broadcasts are right now, but you can track the film. We have a Facebook group, and it's called Cat City, the Documentary. And, of course, the website is www.catcitydocumentary.com. So I want to encourage your listeners to join the Facebook group, and we will post various screenings that will be coming up. I'm hoping that this film will really educate people and open their eyes, and that the film, you know, will be used as a tool for change. So, yeah, please watch on Friday, and please make sure to, you know, keep track of the film through our Facebook group.
And maybe on that note, I know that this is a subject that obviously prompted you to act, and other people that I've known who've had similar experiences with abandoned or feral cats or lost cats even have also felt a similar desire to act, but often people don't really know what to do. And seeing as how you've just made a film on this subject, maybe if you wanted to give a little bit of information on, or maybe your take on, what do you think average people can do to help? Do you recommend getting involved with pre-existing organizations?
Well, I recommend that, you know, educate ourselves as much as possible around the issue, and you know, watch Cat City, and then, you know, go to organizations like Toronto Cat Rescue. There's so many different volunteer rescue organizations specifically dealing with cats in the city. There's Action Volunteers for Animals, AVA. Second Chance Sanctuary, who's also featured in the film, is a sanctuary that you can volunteer for these groups. You can become directly involved in fostering lost, abandoned, or not so much feral cats, unless they're trying to socialize them, but you can volunteer to be a foster home, you can volunteer to drive, you can volunteer to pick up donated food. There's so many ways that people can get involved. And I think also that, you know, if you want to see change happen in the way that we're dealing with this problem, I think you can also write a letter to your city councilor, you know, have a meeting with your city councilor and discuss this with them, you know, sit down. And apparently everybody has the right to a 15-minute meeting with their city councilor. Hmm. And if you're passionate about this issue and you want to see change, set up a meeting or email them and get involved. You know, the interesting thing about new media, online ways of communicating, is it really does help to mobilize people and keep people connected, you know, through social networking. It really is a really useful tool. So I've listed the different rescue organizations on the Cat City Documentary Facebook. Anybody can look at the page. You don't even have to become a member to look at the page. So there's many, many ways, you know, but first, really educate yourself around what are the key points of the issue and what kind of change you would like to see. And, yes, please get involved in these wonderful organizations that are out there day after day doing this incredible work.
Justine, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
Cat City is airing this Friday at 8 p.m. on Global Television. We're not sure when it will be airing again, but we will definitely keep you posted. And, Justine, maybe before we go, I don't know if you have any cats in your life currently that you wanted to give a little shout out to?
I do, absolutely. Tattoo, who is 17 years old.
Wow.
And continues to amaze me every single day and teaches me about how to be a better human being.
Thank you so much for being on the program. I'm really looking forward to seeing the documentary on Friday.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. You were just listening to an interview with Justine Pimlott. She is the director of Cat City, a documentary about cat overpopulation in the city of Toronto. It sounds like it's going to be a really amazing film. You can check out the preview on YouTube. It's airing this Friday at 8 p.m. on Global Television. that is it for Animal Voices for today. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please do drop us a line, animalvoices@gmail.com, or, of course, you can listen to this show and lots of our past programs at www.animalvoices.ca. That's it for me today. Coming up next is Dos Mundos with Sergio.